Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man who is always working on a master plan. He is the Q in the QR Code. It goes by the name of Q Ward.
The voice you just heard will one day realize that that master plan is to retire him on an island in Southeast Asia one day. But until then, I have to keep working. He is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
That's me. And we need you to stay tuned a little later on in the show. It was a toss-up. We were going to talk about one of the two. Rapper T.I.'s son, King, arrested for obstruction. We felt like that fit the culture of today's episode. But we seriously considered covering the decision on Live Nation, but we might sprinkle a little bit of that in there. Stay tuned for that later on. We're going to have some dialogue prior to that. What have you been taking for granted in your life? For QR's clapback, the audacity of male mediocrity. I feel like Q's going to vent both of our frustrations in that clapback today, so I'm looking forward to that. For better do better, Trump posts another strange AI Jesus picture, as if we haven't had enough from this guy. We're going to share our opinions on a video showing an officer slamming a black teenager face first during an arrest. For people that know us and go back with us some time, you know that that's kind of right up our alley. That's typically the sort of thing that we cover. That type of content doesn't always make its way to this show, but today we have to cover that, and there's a very specific reason for that. So we implore you to stay tuned for that. And of course, we're going to start off by talking about something that we think the culture should know about. It comes from a friend of the show, John Hope Bryant, and it is that anti-black discrimination cost the U.S. economy $16 trillion. So all that and so much more to stay tuned for. But right now, and as always, we'd like to start off with a feel-good feature. And today's feel-good feature is some ebony excellence. It's from Black Enterprise. Karen S. Carter named Dow CEO. Number of black women running Fortune 500 companies now at 2. The HBCU grad receiving her bachelor's degree from Howard University joins a small group of women running Fortune 500 companies as the new Dow CEO and an even smaller group of black women who lead them. Dow announced some changes to its leadership on the board of directors, promoting Chief Operating Officer Karen S. Carter to Chief Executive Officer, or CEO. She will replace Jim Fitterling. The move becomes effective July 1st. Quote, she is a disciplined, highly respected leader with a deep understanding of Dow's business and customers. Unquote, Richard David Dow's independent lead director said in a statement. He goes on to say, quote, this appointment reflects our confidence in her ability to lead Dow forward into its next chapter of growth and value creation for customers, employees, and shareholders, end quote. That is it's pretty obvious why that's a feel-good feature. Now we've doubled the number of black women leading Fortune 500 companies, but it also gives us an opportunity to point out that that number now sits at 2. 2 black women. I think that this flies in the face of the narrative that the right is attempting to chronicle in this moment in our nation's history, that DEI is, it has somehow displaced white men from the workforce, or that DEI is for people who didn't earn it. If anything, this woman's accomplishment shows that you have to work twice as hard to be good enough. So anybody that's breaking through the extra thick glass ceiling of the day deserves to be applauded, and it makes us feel good. So that's our feel good feature. Karen S. Carter, look her up. She's amazing. We should try to get her on the show, actually. All right, let's move it on. Anti-black discrimination cost the U.S. economy $16 trillion. Okay, so longtime listeners know that we have a frequent guest on the show. His name is John Hope Bryant. He is an apex capitalist, very intense man when it comes to money, and a man that knows his stuff. He's a brilliant speaker, and he is one of the voices that feels like one of the more promising paths toward equity, equitable treatment of black people, shedding the things that still plague us from our past and this nation's past, is to lean more fully into capitalism. And, you know, none of us ever agree 100% with each other. But, you know, we recognize and respect that a lot of his ideas have merit, and he's a very motivational and very profound speaker. But he also brings data. And we like people that have conversations based around data, which is why he's a frequent guest on the show and a friend. I would call him a friend. So I'm going to share in his own words. It's going to take a little bit, but I think it's important that you hear it directly from his mouth, and then we'll finish painting the picture from there. So here we go.
But according to the Citigroup, discrimination against blacks alone since the year 2000, not 1900s, not during slavery, from the year 2000 to the year 2020, discrimination against blacks alone costs the U.S. economy $16 trillion. That's trillion with a T. This is a report from Citigroup. The report is in the book. This calculated the cost of discrimination against blacks on U.S. GDP. It's an audited number, and they go on to say, if America just knocks it off, discrimination, we'll pick up $1 trillion of GDP a year. Let me add another piece to this. Right now, you have 10,000 baby boomers, read white, wealthy men, 10,000 baby boomers who are leaving the U.S. economy every day. I'm going to slow this down and say this again. It would be shocking if I said 10,000 a year, or 10,000 a month would be shocking. 10,000 a week would be shocking. I'm going to repeat it. Because of age, aging out of the economy, 65, going to retirement, 10,000 wealthy, high-earning, educated, white, mostly male baby boomers are going to go play, all going to play golf at the same time. Somebody has to replace them. Have I got your attention?
All right, we're going to stop it right there. So if you're not familiar with John Hope Bryan, that hopefully gives you an idea of who he is and kind of how he speaks. But in case that didn't live for you, I'm going to share a bit. This is from NPR. Since 2000, U.S. gross domestic product lost that much as a result of discriminatory practices in a range of areas, including in educational and access to business loans, according to a new study by Citigroup. It's not an insignificant number. By comparison, U.S. GDP totaled $19.5 trillion last year. And not acting to reverse discriminatory practices will continue to exact a cost. Citigroup estimates the economy would see a $5 trillion boost over the next 5 years if the U.S. were to tackle key areas of discrimination against African Americans. Now, I want to make that clear. This is simply anti-black discrimination. This is not anti-immigrant, and by extension, anti-Latino discrimination. This is not anti-trans discrimination. No, this is just anti-black discrimination. So imagine how much racism and discrimination is costing this country in terms of the opportunity, right? We in business school, we call this opportunity cost. This is what you're missing out on that you could have. And speaking of which, because I don't have enough time, because I want to give Q plenty of time. I can't explain every single facet of why this number, $16 trillion of lost economics in that, 20-year period between 2000 and 2020. I can't explain every area that these losses, that account for these losses, but I do know that if you take into account a huge chunk of people that get skipped over for positions that they actually are competent enough to take advantage of and maximize for a given company, but they're passed over for a mediocre white man. or blind spots in terms of marketing, in terms of merchandising, where, you know, companies are susceptible to lawsuits. Some companies are susceptible to any number of things, right? Blind spots, and an example I shared that I learned from business school was, this is not an anti-Black one, but I do have a number of examples there. But this one I think translates a little bit easier and more quickly. When Colgate had to penetrate the Mexican market in Mexico, and they just kind of launched Colgate in Mexico without any Spanish speakers at the table making decisions with them, they created a marketing blunder that cost them tremendously, because Colgate is read Colgate in Spanish, and Colgate means go hang yourself. And there was no one there with the insight, with the cultural competency to tell them, hey, we should probably spend some money on introducing this phonetically, or, you know, whatever. And so blind spots are very, very plentiful when you lack diversity and you're trying to market products, which, you know, a significant amount of this country still does. Q, I know you have something to offer here. So
there's a lot to consider, especially when it's coming from John Hope Bryant. Again, you know my thoughts on apex hyper-capitalist. And it's not, I think people confuse me saying that capitalism is a non-virtuous system to mean that everybody that participates is somehow immoral. And that's not what I'm saying. The system itself has created circumstances that require a segment of the populace to have nothing. And when a system is set up that way, where it requires, therefore constitutes, therefore makes a way, therefore creates the circumstance where some of its population has nothing, then yeah, it is without virtue. But imagine a world, and there's been so many cases in U.S. history where capitalism has kind of won out over racism, but ultimately racism wins. Mm. Trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
And a non-Black entity provided the data to substantiate this claim. Trillions in the teens, too. Trillions with a T. Not 1 trillion, but in the 16. Teens.
Yeah.
And they're still like, no, we good. Like, that is an insane reality that we live in. They won't even admit that that's the truth, let alone do something to change it.
Yeah.
And I guess you can do something to change it without admitting it, like in the name of your own well-being, in the name of your own greed, because we know the greed exists. We know that the desire for more exists. We know that the desire to exploit more exists. We're watching it happen in our government. So yeah, imagine having all the data that tells you, hey, you could make close to $20 trillion more dollars if you just start treating Black people better. And they're like, nah, we good, fam.
Yeah, and while we're here, I think it's important to mention that this study was done before the last election. And again, it's by Citigroup. So I think your point is well made, because Citigroup is not, that's a huge conglomerate, banking, financial conglomerate, right? And Trump wins, rolls back all the DEI. They're looking at this, you know, Citigroup, apex capitalist. They're looking at that $16 trillion of opportunity cost. Like, that, we can't get it if he's rolling back all the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative, so we can get those people to provide their insight and their perspective. You know, we just talked about a woman, the second woman to lead a Fortune 500 company. And that, I guess, comparatively speaking, depressed economy is what we're stuck with because of that racism that you've identified, and that we continue to identify. So your point is well made. All right, we got to move it on. Video shows officer, slam black teen face first during arrest. We'll share from the BIN. A black teenager in California is suing the city of San Bernardino and two police officers after a violent 2025 arrest left her with a traumatic brain injury, facial injuries, and lasting emotional distress, according to a newly filed lawsuit. Erin Marie Couser, now 18, was 17 when San Bernardino police responded to a fight call outside a Food for Less on May 21st, 2025. According to NBC Los Angeles, her lawsuit says she was actually the victim of an assault by other teens inside the store when Officer Jackson Tubbs grabbed her from behind her SpongeBob SquarePants backpack, pinned her arms back, and slammed her face first into the pavement. The complaint names Tubbs, Officer Cynthia Gillen, and the city as defendants. All right, buckle up. Video of the arrest has become central to the case. Cell phone footage and body camera video were cited by Couser's attorneys as evidence contradicting the police narrative. The footage appears to show Tubbs pulling Couser away and taking her to the ground, after which she was seen bleeding from the face. Couser's lawyers say the force used against her was both excessive and unprovoked. At a press conference announcing the suit, attorney Tony J. Jamarilla said Tubbs performed a hip toss that flipped Erin in the air, leaving her to land face first, head first on the concrete. In a statement per ABC7, Jamarilla said this was not a mistake. It was violence followed by dishonesty. The lawsuit says Couser lost consciousness and suffered a traumatic brain injury, memory loss, and a deep laceration under her chin, facial abrasions, wrist and back injuries, and permanent scarring. It also alleges that she was knocked unconscious. Tubbs lifted her and dropped her face first onto the metal floor sill of his patrol car. Those allegations come from the complaint itself and have not been proven in court. Couser told ABC 7 that when she regained consciousness in the back of the patrol car, she saw blood on her body and asked the officer what happened. Quote, he was like you fell, unquote, she said before losing consciousness again. The department publicly described the arrest differently at the time. In a May 2025 statement, San Bernardino police said Couser had been detained on suspicion of trespassing and attempting to fight other juveniles, and that an officer used a takedown maneuver after she allegedly pulled away while only one wrist was handcuffed. But Couser's attorneys say that version left out key facts. The lawsuit alleges officers falsely told Couser's family that her injuries were caused by other juveniles, not police force. It also claims Tubbs later admitted during an internal use of force investigation that he lied about how she was injured, though the department never publicly corrected its earlier account. That allegation appears in the complaint. The misdemeanor charges against Couser were later dropped. Her lawsuit now accuses the officers and the city of civil rights violations under California law, assault and battery, and negligence. The San Bernardino Police Department told ABC 7 it could not comment because of the pending litigation. I know that was a long walk, but as I mentioned, we're gonna tie it all in together. Pay attention to the SpongeBob backpack that he grabbed her by. So as I mentioned, you know, Q and I, the nexus of this path that we now walk had to do with police accountability. And affirming that black life has worth. If no one else will say it, we'll be the last two to say it. We'll say Black Lives Matter. And we are both men. And along with that comes a charge to basically be a man. And, you know, stand up for what you believe in and do what you think is right. And when police abuse their position repeatedly, and it overwhelmingly, disproportionately, negatively affects black and brown bodies, us being the men that we are in a position to do something about it, we feel compelled to do something about it. And so again, this is the nexus of this particular facet of our career. This is a child, again, 17 years old. If you haven't seen this video, I would not encourage you to watch it. I, as a rule, don't encourage people to watch violence against black and brown bodies because we don't want people to become desensitized to it. Even on this show, when we have to watch videos like this, we typically will take turns to make sure that we don't become desensitized and we don't. It's a heavy burden to bear after so many years of seeing so much harm done over and over again every single day, specifically to Black and brown people. It like messes with your brain. It makes you like really, really depressed and really, really sad. And if you haven't worked in this space, I wouldn't have known it until I got here. So, but I don't want to mislead or misrepresent anyone. The video is available for you to watch yourself. But we have a problem with the police, and that problem is valid. It is well documented, and it leads people to fear the folks who are supposed to be the protectors. I remember my first couple of years, maybe in school, kindergarten, first grade, you know, they teach you the police are the good guys. You know, you watch a couple of movies, you think the police are the good guys. You know, it's all propaganda, which is something we've talked about on the show a few times. But then you get a little older, you know, and my first interactions with the police were the LAPD. This was back in the 80s, and that was not a good place to learn about police, like in real time. But then you realize the police are always the good guys. In fact, you kind of, you know, they're cast as the bad guys in a lot of stories. And so you very easily can become afraid of the police, which is something that still exists in the, I don't even want to say the corners of my mind. It's still a very significant part of my mind. And it's stories like these. This is a recent story, but I could tell my own personal stories of police harming this very body in which I live. And I've never been arrested. I've never, you know, none of that sort of, but police, they just. And so when we feel compelled to tell these stories and frame conversations, it's our responsibility to do so. Q, I know you have a daughter, and I know this one hit a little different. Your thoughts here?
You know, the difficult thing for me is that it wasn't propaganda for me. My mom's baby brother and my dad's baby brother were police officers.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's baby brother was the highest ranking non-chief police officer in Detroit. He was the chief inspector, internal affairs. My daddy's baby brother was a detective. The cops were absolutely the good guys in my mind as a child, because these were two men who literally protected me.
Mm-hmm.
Two men who literally protected my mom. Two men who showed up when a grown man slapped me in my face and made sure that that man was arrested and I had to go to court, and that was a really scary thing for me. So becoming a man taught me that my uncles were the exception. Maybe, right? I didn't do an audit of their careers. I thought they were great humans. Well, I knew they were great humans. I do not know how they were as police officers. I didn't have to interact with them in that way. But I became a man and learned on my own through experience that cops are not always the good guys. And if you're listening to this show, you know Rams and I spend a lot of time pointing out that they're not always the good guys. Not seeking it out, but quite frankly, there are too many stories like this for us to even cover them all. And I am a dad. And my genuine, sincere, to my bones fears about what law enforcement in this country could and would do to my family drives every decision that I make every day to try my best to make sure to protect them and shield them from things like that ever happening to them. Ramses knows that on a far more personal note than I have enough time to share on the show.
Yeah. Before we move on, I want to kind of double down on what you said. We absolutely don't seek out these individual stories to highlight. If we did, the whole show would be these stories every single time we recorded. We skip a lot of these and we try to have like higher level conversations. Every so often, there's something that gets shared widely that we kind of have to share with an audience, or help people kind of with some perspective or whatever. And we'll pick an individual story and just remind folks, hey, this is still a thing, you know, whatever. But for the most part, we deal with higher level stuff. So this is not me being nitpicking. I'm not trying to chronicle a narrative. There've been people that have lived full lives and died long before I was born that have done this work. I don't need to do it. It's been well established and well documented. You know, Huey Newton died many years ago, for folks that understand that. So, yeah, that just happened to be the story that came up today that we needed to talk about. And again, don't forget that SpongeBob backpack that child was wearing. Okay. It'll come up later on the test. All right. Better do better. Okay. So, Trump posts another strange AI Jesus picture. All right. Forbes. President Donald Trump on Wednesday reposted an AI-generated image of himself and Jesus in a close embrace in front of the American flag, calling the image quite nice, days after another image in which he himself was depicted as Jesus was slammed as blasphemy by conservative Christians. Now, the caption on this picture of him and Jesus hugging each other, the caption reads, "The radical left lunatics might not like this, but I think it's quite nice." And then 3 exclamation points, and then President DJT. So, yeah, this is weird. To I think reasonable people, it's weird. Donald Trump, and Q, you'll remember this. There was an interview that Donald Trump did with, it was some evangelicals. It was widely circulated. And they were talking about the Bible and like, hey, are you a fan of the Bible? And he's like, Donald Trump's like, yeah, of course I'm a fan of the Bible. I read the Bible all the time, blah, blah, blah. I've been, you know, always been a fan of the Bible. And they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, share with our listeners, you know, maybe what's one of your favorite passages or, you know, where do you go to when you need whatever? And he's like, no, I don't want to get into that. And they're like, no, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Just, you know, maybe one of your favorite scriptures, just anything. It doesn't really matter. And he's like, no, I don't want that. That's like too personal. I don't want to get into that, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, again, those of us who see the world clearly know the sky is blue in the daytime. And water is wet. Sand sticks to the bottom of your feet. Can see through that. See right through it. We know Donald Trump doesn't read the Bible, has never read the Bible, probably. And he doesn't read in period, right? Certainly wouldn't read the Bible. This man is outwardly immoral. So even if he did read the Bible, it has no bearing, no impact on his life, his steps, his demeanor, nothing. There is nothing Christ-like about this man whatsoever. Okay. And again, anybody who's objective can see that, right? Now, to date, Donald Trump has posted himself as a king, right? In a country where we famously don't like kings. And these are all like AI pictures, but it gives you an idea of how he sees himself or how he wants his followers to see him or how he thinks his followers see him. Either way, it all points in the same direction. So he's posted himself as a king. He posted himself as the Pope. Remember when we got a new pope? And Donald Trump was playing with that line, right? And then a few days ago posted himself as Jesus and then tried to walk that back by saying he was a doctor or a Red Cross worker, okay? Then that, of course, again, anybody who's objective sees, no, that's not what that is, okay? And now he's posting another picture with him and Jesus in an embrace. So what I think this tells you is something that I think I'm here now, but this is a line that's taken me a while to walk up to, is that Donald Trump sees himself as a deity, or at minimum, deity aligned, and he knows that his followers see him the same way, which is why he has no problem posting himself as a king, a pope, or Jesus Christ himself. And if he can't get that bar off, maybe Jesus is the one that loves him the most. Don't forget, Jesus picked me. And they'll eat it up every time. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this.